Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So maybe you know our next guest as Silent Bob, the recurring character in many of his films, but director Kevin Smith actually has plenty to say. Over the years, Smith has built a dedicated following for what's become something of a media empire. Smith has published several books, helms a successful podcast network, and makes sold-out Q&A appearances across the country. The second season of his reality show, Comic Book Men, on AMC. Here's the cast of the show doing their thing, talking about which superpower they'd have given the choice.
I'd go with teleportation. Now, you're a man who travels a lot. Imagine never having to deal with, airplanes.
I back this man's idea.
Airplanes, traffic, other people. Be great. Just bam.
A power, when you really think about it, that could really never work, though.
Why?
Because if you're teleporting somewhere, how do you know you're not going to teleport into something that's, like, solid?
In Star Trek, they're always looking at the coordinates where something's going.
Right.
So they have a general idea of where they're going to place you.
Even that's improbable.
All right. Kevin Smith and the cast of Comic Book Men. Hi, Kevin. Welcome to WNYC. Thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, man.
The stash is Silent Bob's secret stash in Red Bank, New Jersey, your comic shop. What made you think that everyday goings on at the shop would make a good location for a TV show?
It wasn't even me. Somebody had kind of come asking me if I had an idea for a television show. There's a guy named Charlie Corwin who runs Original Media. They co-produced the show with me. And he said AMC, the network that does, you know, Mad Men, The Walking Dead, Breaking Bad, AMC was looking to do some more what they call geek programming, stuff that, like, appealed to the Walking Dead audience. First, this is after their first season. Ironically and hysterically, almost in retrospect, they were afraid that people wouldn't come back for season two of Walking Dead. Not only did it go up season two, it also went up season three. It's a phenomenon. But at this point, they were like, we want to see if we could put more geek programming on the channel to the same audience who watches this. And do you have any ideas? And so I didn't. I had no ideas. And even I said, man, I'm sorry. I've got nothing for TV. I said, but you know what you guys should do? If you want to do inexpensive geek programming, turn a camera on us, on the audience. Like, you don't have to go through the bother of trying to explain a comic book store, the concept of people that work at a comic book store anymore, because The Simpsons have shown us the comic book guy for 20 years. The Big Bang Theory shows us comic book stores and geeks every week. So the shorthand is there now. 15 years ago, you couldn't do a show like this because people wouldn't understand, like, what? There are stores that just sell comic books? But now it's kind of common knowledge. So suddenly putting cameras in there and sticking them on the people that I always thought were really interesting, the erudition behind the counter at a comic book store is unparalleled anywhere in this universe.
You made your name in movies with films like Clerks and Chasing Amy, but last year you announced your retirement from film with such a dedicated fan base. I'm wondering what led you to that decision.
I've been doing it. By the time I will stop, it'll be about 20 years, two decades of me directing films. And I love it, and it's great, but honestly, I'm not going to bring anything really all that new to the game anymore. And my feeling is, if you can't elevate the genre, the arts, maybe you should step back and let the younger cats at it. I was a young buck at one point who made my first flick, and boom, I got a seat at the table because of it. Now it's time for me to step back from the table, and believe me, I take up two spots as major airline would tell you at one point. Step back from the table, let some young artists in there, man. Go at the filmmaking. Me, I'll be off doing some other cool stuff that, thanks to filmmaking, I've discovered along the way, like all the podcasting. I want to do what you do, dude. I love theater of the mind. I would rather live in people's ears on the radio, man, because I got a body built for radio, and I love to talk. So that's where I'm kind of headed. I'm trying to get out of the visual spectrum, head over to the aural spectrum, A-U-R-A-L, and also O-R-A-L, if that turns the ladies on.
Now, we had New York film critic David Denby on earlier in the week, and I know you've had your issues with critics in the past, but I want you to listen to this clip, which in a way relates the world of film to the world of action comics and a problem that he sees. Listen to him.
Much of the big studio product is based on comic books or games or increasingly young adult fictions. At least the girls are getting into the game now with Hunger Games, and they catch these kids when they're 7 or 8 or 9, and then they hold them with franchises for another 15 years or so. And my problem with it is, I mean, some of these movies are fun, but a lot of it, Brian, is just, you know, contention among exacerbated pixels in a kind of dead air of digital space. And the next day, you don't remember anything.
David Denby from The New Yorker earlier in the week.
Exacerbated pixels in a dead air space is something that somebody who has no interest in solving the problem would say. If you're a person that's like, I don't like all these comic book movies, well, David, go out and make a movie. Don't be the guy that sits around and talks about what's wrong. Go out and bring your own point of view to cinema. Make a movie. Don't sit around watching. I got no problem with critics, man. This is what I got a problem with. Anybody who wants to see my work or anybody else's work for free and then comment on it while the rest of the audience has to pay in order to do so. You pay for one of my things, you can say whatever you want about it to my face. I'll probably smile at you while you do it because what do I care? It's your opinion versus mine. But when it comes to people sitting around going, you know what's wrong with cinema? Well, get off your ass and fix it, David. In the age of democratized technology where even my kid who's 12, 13 now shot a film, edited it, and uploaded it to the internet, why can't David Denby do the same thing and stop bitching about what other people are doing? If he doesn't like comic book movies, don't go see him, for heaven's sakes.
Well,
and in terms of the franchises, I grew up on a Star Wars franchise, and I turned into a healthy individual who also makes arts. I suggest David do the same. Instead of writing about the arts, go make an art, man.
Well, some people are filmmakers, some people are writers.
But I don't accept that in this day and age, sir. It used to be okay to say some people could do this, others can't. Now we can all do anything. There's a wonderful film critic by the name of Matt Zoller-Seitz who used to just review movies, and then one day he was like, you know what? I'm going to take it into a visual spectrum, do video essays. He does the most wonderful video essays right now. It's no longer content to just sit there, watch a movie for free, and then crap in its mouth later on. Now he's adding to the discussion by creating art. We can all do it. I'm an idiot, man. I'm an absolute idiot from central New Jersey, and I made it. You know, I jumped out there and started speaking my mind. That's what we can all do. We all have that ability. Don't listen to anybody that says, this one has talent, this one does not. We all have a story to tell. We're all wonderful content generators with tons to say. So for me, it's not enough to listen to somebody with tons to say about somebody else's work. I like David Denby. I think he's a wonderful critic. I've read him for years. But at the end of the day, David, you can't bitch anymore. Go out and change it.
Do you have an opinion about digital comics? Some people say, hey, you know, these things look great on the iPad and other tablets, but they're getting kind of sentimental about the physical book.
Saying goodbye to paper? I grew up on paper comic books, so to me, comic books, of course, will always be identified by 22 pages between covers with some staples in it. But we're in a digital age now. I love looking at comic books on my iPhone or on the iPad because they have a program that actually takes you from panel to panel. You can either look at it the way you want, full page, or they'll do the zoom-in thing that's actually kind of fun. The beautiful thing I just read this morning is Comixology, which is this digital comics website that carries the big ones like DC, Marvel, Dynamite Comics, Dark Horse. They've just announced that now they're going into beta testing on a program that allows anybody to submit a homegrown comic book and sell it on their site. Now, they'll take 30% like Apple does, and then they'll also take 50% of the sales, just like a major publisher would. But that allows everyone access. In the beginning at Kickstarter, you had so many people who were jumping on creating graphic novels, trying to raise money to do comic books. Now, Comixology is going like, look, let's be honest, man, paper's going away, and it's a lot cheaper for you guys to just send us your stuff, and boom, we could put it out for sale in the digital world. You could do one comic for 99 cents, or you could, like, 22 pages, or you could do 17 volumes for 99 cents. It's up to you how you want to sell it. That's exciting to somebody like me, man, to be able to open up the field to a reader. Like, that's what I did in film years ago. I used to like watching movies, and then I was like, forget it, I want to make one too. Now, folks who love comics can do the same thing. It's like, I've been reading comics for a year, now I'm going to take my shot at it. And they don't care what it looks like. They're not saying, hey, it can't be pencil sketches or anything like that, because some of the best indie books in the world are just pencil sketches by people with not any classical quote-unquote training. But it's the story, it's the message, it's the content, it's what's contained within those drawings and then the panels that makes all the difference, that touches you, carries you throughout the day, puts a little spring in your step, and now everybody can do that. That's exciting to
me. This is really your big thing. Critics shouldn't just critique they should go out and do? People who are fans shouldn't just read, go out and do.
Absolutely. Look, for years we were all content to be entertained, but thanks to the democratization of technology, we can now go out and be entertaining as well. You don't have to be one thing. You don't have to divide audience and person, pleasing the audience or entertaining the audience. That switches all the time. Look at the infinite possibility of choices we're faced with every day. It used to be like we go to a Broadway show. Then it was you go to a Broadway show or a movie. Then it was Broadway show, movie, or TV. That's gone, man. Now it's like a pool that's so deep. You go to the internet. You could play video games. You could do all these things that kind of take our minds off the, unmitigated truth that one day we're going to die. All these wonderful distractions. Add to the distractions, people. Be that person that jumps out there and creates something that allows someone else in this world just a few minutes respite from the knowledge that one day we're going
to
die.
Can I get you to take our last minute or so to talk about your New Jersey soul? Of course, Comic Book Men takes place at your shop in New Jersey. I gather you've lived primarily in L.A. for the past decade, but you talk about New Jersey. What do you love about New Jersey? What do you miss when you're in the Hollywood Hills?
What I miss is, I miss every once in a while the seasons, but then I remember that I used to have to shovel snow and rake leaves, so I don't miss them that much.
Yeah.
I don't miss it too often because I go back quite regularly and whatnot, but the thing that I love about New Jersey and the thing that shaped me both inside and outside as a large man has everything to do with growing up in the city of something larger than yourself, growing up in the shadow, rather, of something larger than yourself. I grew up in the city, in the shadow of New York City, like right, maybe 45 minutes away from New York City. And everybody in the world talks about New York. New York sets the tone. All the stories kind of come out of New York. New York, New York, New York. New Jersey was, right next door, the toxic waste jump, joke capital of the world and stuff. So when you grow up in the shadow of that, you tend to try a lot harder, man. I'm not saying it puts a chip on your shoulder, but you realize, like, all the attention is always going to go to the beautiful people or the beautiful places, but it doesn't mean that you can't express yourself. It doesn't mean you can't try to quietly do something off to the side. I think that's what is in the heart and soul of every New Jerseyan, is we always have to try harder. The good news for ladies is that means the men try a lot harder in bed. We're very oral.
And on that note, since there would be nothing left to say after that, and Kevin Smith, great to talk to you. Thank you for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.